Midnight has passed, and in the stillness of these hours, the hauntings are never silent. This is Real Ghost Stories Online, After Midnight.
Some houses don't feel wrong right away. They don't announce themselves with cold spots or slamming doors. Sometimes the first thing they do is simply let everything else fall apart. The house in Vernon was already breaking the family long before anything strange showed itself. The walls didn't cause the shouting, the silence, the distance that grew between parents and children, but it felt in hindsight like the house learned from it. Like it listened. Like it watched the way people drifted past one another without really seeing each other anymore. From the outside, it looked like any other family home. Inside, it held the weight of people who were tired, angry, distracted, or already planning their exits. A father who had decided he was done. A mother quietly preparing for a future she hadn't told her children about yet. An older brother, gone as soon as he could legally disappear, numbing himself wherever he landed. An older sister wrapped up in her own battles, with no patience left for anyone smaller or younger. And two younger girls trying to exist in the cracks between all of it. It wasn't a house filled with warmth or safety. It was cramped, tense, always loud in the wrong ways and silent in the others. Doors closed, voices raised, long stretches where no one checked on anyone else because everyone assumed someone else would. That's where it started. Before anything paranormal entered the picture, there was already something off. Not supernatural, just human. The kind of environment where kids learn to stay quiet, stay small, and figure things out on their own. The kind where fear doesn't stand out because it blends in with everything else. The layout of the house made it impossible to avoid one another, yet somehow made it easy to feel alone. You stepped through the front door into a small foyer that opened almost immediately into the dining room and kitchen, which flowed together like one long space. To the left, a hallway ran back toward the bedrooms. To the right, the kitchen opened up, and straight ahead, down a couple of shallow steps from the dining room, was a large family room, sunken just enough to feel separated, like a place where things could happen without being fully seen. Standing in that foyer, you could see nearly the entire house at once. There were very few places to hide, very few places to feel unseen. For one of the girls, that mattered more than anyone realized at the time. As a child, she had a history of sleepwalking. It wasn't occasional, it was frequent. She would go to bed in her room and wake up hours later somewhere else entirely. The living room, the kitchen, sometimes sprawled across the couch without remembering how she got there. Worse, there were times when she interacted with people while sleepwalking, conversations she didn't remember, questions she didn't recall answering, moments where she seemed awake enough to fool others, but not herself. Doctors shrugged it off. Kids do strange things in their sleep. Stress makes it worse. She'd grow out of it. So when the first encounter happened, no one was quick to assume it was anything other than another episode. At least at first. The night it began felt ordinary. She went to bed in her own room, wearing the same pajamas she'd worn countless nights before. The house settled around her in the way it always did, quiet but not peaceful. She fell asleep without any sense that the night would be different from the others. In the dream, or what she believed was a dream, she found herself walking down the hallway toward the living room. Everything was exactly as it had been when she went to bed. The lighting, the furniture, the faint glow from the kitchen area, even the feel of the carpet under her feet was familiar. She was wearing the same pajamas. That detail stuck with her later because dreams usually get those things wrong. This one didn't. And as she moved toward the living room, something pulled at her attention. A feeling, more than a thought, an urge to look into the kitchen. She stopped near the dining room and turned her head. That's when she saw him. He stood in the doorway between the dining room and the kitchen, tall enough that his presence seemed to stretch the space upward, not scraping the ceiling exactly, but close enough that it felt wrong, like he didn't belong inside a house built for people. His shape was vaguely human, but elongated, distorted, draped in what looked like a black robe that absorbed the light around it instead of reflecting it. Where his head should have been, there was nothing solid, just Static. Not flickering light. Not smoke. Static. The kind you used to see on old televisions when the signal cut out. A dense, buzzing sphere where a face should have been. Shifted and crackled constantly, accompanied by a sound that wasn't loud at first, but relentless. A low, electric hum that seemed to vibrate inside her skull, rather than her ears. She couldn't move. Fear locked her in place as she stared up at him, trying to make sense of what she was seeing. Her brain scrambled for explanations. Nightmare, sleepwalking, imagination. But none of them fit. This felt too real, too consistent, too precise. For a few seconds, or maybe longer, the static man didn't move. He simply stood there, facing her, the buzzing filling the space between them. Then he reached out. His arm was long, impossibly so, stretching toward her in a slow, deliberate motion. As it extended, his entire form seemed to glide forward, floating rather than walking, closing the distance inch by inch. The buzzing intensified, rising in pitch and volume, until it pressed painfully against her ears. She tried to scream, but nothing came out. Her throat locked, her lungs refused to cooperate. Instinctively, she squeezed her eyes shut. And then she woke up. She was lying on the couch in the dining room facing the kitchen. Not in her bed, not in the hallway. Exactly where she'd been standing in the dream. For a long moment, she didn't move. Her heart raced. Her skin prickled. The house was silent, but the silence felt fragile, like it could shatter at any second. Eventually, she got up and went back to bed. In the morning, she told her parents about the dream. She described the static man, the buzzing, the way it felt more real than any nightmare she'd ever had. They listened, they nodded, and then they did what exhausted parents often do. They dismissed it. Kids have vivid imaginations. Sleepwalking can blur dreams and reality. Stress causes nightmares. Nothing about the conversation suggested danger. Nothing prompted concern. And so, after a while, she tried to brush it off too. Except the house didn't forget. She wasn't the only one seeing things. Her younger sister, Catherine, Cat, as everyone called hers, had her own experiences in that house. Things she didn't always talk about right away. Shadows that slipped through her peripheral vision. Voices that called her name when no one else was around. A constant sense that the house was more crowded than it looked. One night, Cat woke up in her bed for no clear reason. When she opened her eyes, the static man was standing between the two beds in their room. He wasn't reaching for her. He was watching. Even years later, Cat would struggle to explain what she felt in that moment. Fear, yes, but also anger. A sudden, fierce certainty that whatever this thing was, it didn't belong there. That it had no right to be in their room. She sat up in bed and yelled at it. She told it to get out. Told it that God would be angry if it didn't leave them alone. She didn't whisper. She didn't hesitate. She spoke with the kind of conviction adults rarely expect from children. And then, in a flash of bright light, the static man was gone. Just like that. The room fell silent, no buzzing, no pressure, nothing. Cat laid back down and slept peacefully for the rest of the night. She didn't wake anyone. She didn't scream. She didn't cry. To her, it was finished. Later, there were other things, moments that felt smaller but no less unsettling. Playing outside one afternoon, Cat looked through the gate toward the alley behind their yard and saw children standing there. Not kids she recognized, not neighbors. They called to her, promising fun, urging her to come closer. Something about them felt wrong. She ran inside and slammed the door, heart pounding, refusing to explain why until years later. After Cat's confrontation, the static man didn't appear again for a long time. Life changed. The family moved. Her mother took them to Wichita Falls to finish her nursing degree. Her father relocated to Abilene. They started attending Catholic school. The chaos of the Vernon house faded into memory. And something else happened, too. The sleepwalking stopped. For the first time in years, she slept through the night in her own bed. No wandering, no waking in strange places, no blurred lines between dreams and reality. For a while, everything felt normal. which made what came later all the more disturbing. Because when the Static Man returned, it wasn't in Vernon, and it wasn't in a dream. Years passed in a way that almost made it easy to believe Vernon had been the problem all along. A bad house during a bad time. A childhood nightmare amplified by stress, neglect, and too many things left unsaid. Distance softened the memories. Routine replaced survival. And for a while, it really did feel like whatever had lived in that house had stayed there. Then the family tried to put itself back together. Her mother, hopeful and tired in equal measure, decided to move back in with her father. It was meant to be a fresh start, a repair attempt, a way to stabilize everything that had fractured. The new house was different. Different town, different layout, different energy. It didn't carry the same claustrophobic weight as Vernon. At least, not at first. The first few months passed quietly. Too quietly, maybe. The kind of calm that feels temporary, like a held breath. Then one night she woke up drenched in sweat. Her eyes open before she fully realized she was awake, her body already tense, already bracing for something she couldn't yet name. The room was dark, but familiar. Her bed, her walls, the faint outline of furniture where it always was, and standing beside her bed was the Static Man. He leaned over her close enough that she could feel the wrongness of him even before the sound started. The buzzing filled the room instantly, louder than she remembered, harsher, like 1,000 wires screaming at once. Panic surged through her, and before she could scream or move or even fully inhale, her body jerked violently upward. Not rolling, not sitting up, lifted. She was thrown several inches straight up off the mattress, as if something beneath her had launched her into the air. She landed hard, the breath knocked out of her, her spine slamming back into the bed. Later, she would try to recreate the movement, pushing with her legs, arching her back, anything, and she couldn't even come close. The physics of it didn't make sense. Before she could recover, something pinned her down. Pressure clamped onto her arms and legs, forcing them flat against the mattress. She thrashed instinctively, but the force holding her was stronger than anything she'd ever felt. Hands closed around her throat, cold, firm, real. She couldn't breathe. Her mind raced as her body fought uselessly beneath the weight. She turned her head, desperately scanning the room, praying her sister would wake up, that someone would see, that someone would help. Cat slept on. In her panic, she became aware of something that made her terror spike even higher. Wherever she felt fingers digging into her arms and legs, her skin visibly depressed beneath them, as if someone were physically gripping her. Not imagined, not internal. There were marks being made. Then just as suddenly as it began, the pressure vanished. The hands released her throat, the weight lifted, the buzzing cut out mid-scream like a switch being flipped. The Static Man was gone. She lay there gasping, her body shaking uncontrollably, staring at the ceiling until dawn. She didn't sleep again that night. She didn't tell anyone what had happened. Not yet. She didn't have the words, and she didn't trust that anyone would believe her. What followed was worse. It didn't happen once, but it happened almost every night. The pattern was terrifyingly consistent. She would wake suddenly, heart racing, and he would be there. Sometimes standing, sometimes leaning, sometimes close enough that she could feel the static humming inside her bones. The attacks varied, being held down, being lifted, being choked, but the end was always the same. He would vanish without warning, leaving her alone, exhausted and terrified, in the dark. Over time, the lack of sleep began to hollow her out. Her grades collapsed, her energy disappeared. She snapped at her family without warning, rage spilling out in ways she didn't recognize or control. Once, in a moment that still horrifies her to think about, she pressed a pillow over her little sister's face before fully realizing what she was doing. That scared her more than the Static Man ever had. She began hurting herself, biting, hitting, cutting, just to feel something solid and real, to remind herself she still existed. The line between fear and numbness blurred until she wasn't sure which was worse, and she tried to end her life.
Then
eventually her mother moved her and her sister out again into an apartment meant to be a refuge, a clean slate, a safe place, but the damage had already been done. The static man still came. When she finally worked up the courage to tell her mother what was happening, the response was dismissive, not out of cruelty, but exhaustion, stress, fear, a need for normal explanations. It's just dreams. It's the medication, side effects, night terrors. Her mother insisted she would know if something was wrong. She had experience with these things, she said, and even when they slept in the same bed and the mattress shook violently during an attack, the explanation remained the same. Stop shaking the bed. Go back to sleep. The message was clear, even if it wasn't intentional. This wasn't something that could be talked about. This wasn't something that could be real. One night, after weeks of relentless fear, she lay in her bed crying. She didn't wait for the static man. She assumed he would come, that he always would. Exhausted, shaking, and hollow, she whispered the only plea she had left, over and over again. A child's prayer, not eloquent, not measured, just desperate. Please, God, please, just one night. Something changed. Not the room, not the house, something inside her. A calm settled over her like a heavy blanket. Her breathing slowed, her thoughts quieted. For the first time in months, she felt safe. And when the static man appeared that night, she didn't panic, and he jolted her upward the same way he always had. But this time, there was no pain, no hands, no choking, no buzzing. He didn't touch her at all. She fell back onto the mattress and slept deeply. The attacks didn't stop immediately, but they changed. They weakened. The static man came less often. When he did, he kept his distance. He watched, he lingered, and then he disappeared. Eventually, the visits stopped altogether. Looking back now, she doesn't believe the static man followed her from house to house in the way people imagine when they hear stories like this. She believes something else happened, something quieter, but no less disturbing. The Vernon House was where it began, a place soaked in neglect, resentment, fear, and emotional abandonment. A place where children learned to stay silent and unseen. Whatever manifested there fed on that environment. When the family fractured, it latched onto the damage it had helped deepen. The later appearances, she believes, were echoes. Trauma replaying itself through sleep paralysis and fear. A mind trying to survive something it had never been allowed to process. She later learned that two boys who lived in the Vernon House after her family moved out died by suicide under mysterious circumstances. Whether that means anything, she doesn't know. She stopped trying to find answers that don't want to be found. What she does know is this. Some houses don't let go of what happens inside them. They absorb it. They amplify it. And sometimes, when children grow up in those spaces, the fear doesn't stay neatly behind when the door finally closes. But it doesn't always follow forever. Sometimes it fades. Sometimes it weakens. And sometimes surviving it is the victory, even if you never fully understand what it was that tried to break you in the first place.
Want more real ghost stories? Then press subscribe now so you don't miss any of the multiple new ghost stories we drop for you every day. Only here at Real Ghost Stories Online.